The last thing he remembers is slamming the door on her tear-stained face, running down the stairs, away from the apartment he had never had any claim to, pushing through the front door and onto the street, all his thoughts focused on escape. He still isn't used to LA. The street is full of people who push back when he stumbles into them. The door opens behind him and she steps out, holding the door in one hand so it can't swing closed and lock her out. The last thing he remembers is her voice. "Chris, wait! Chris, you don't understand!" Reasonable, upset, then rising in panic. "Chris!" He still isn't used to LA. Someone pushes him and he stumbles into the road. The road that is so much busier than the ones in Arkansas. And there's a white van and everything seems to slow down. The last thing he remembers is the road against his cheek, lying in a pool of blood, sure he's dying. He doesn't die then. "He's right there!" someone is shouting. "He's right there, and he's alive, so save him!" This feels like dying. Chris wakes up. That's the first surprise. The second being the lack of pain. He can still feel his arms, his legs, right down to the tips of his fingers and toes, and nothing hurts. He isn't sure that he can move them, but he knows they're there. He can feel the softness of a blanket against his toes and the cool air against his fingertips. The last thing he remembers, pain, a van, a woman screaming, flashes through his mind, but he pushes it away. "He's awake," says a voice, and Chris can't say for sure if it's coming through his ears or if it just started inside his head. Perhaps it's both? "Can I go now?" He wonders if this is how angels talk. If he didn't survive the van and is lying in heaven somewhere. Except, there's no feelings of bliss or the presence of the Lord, so maybe the handful of lives Chris can say for certain that he's saved isn't enough to get you into heaven these days. A handful of people isn't that many. "I think you should stay for this." This man's voice doesn't echo in his head at all, so perhaps he isn't an angel. Chris opens his eyes slowly and sees a ceiling made from square tiles, which evidently used to be white, but have been in use long enough for the paint to yellow and chip. It seems unlikely that the afterlife uses ceiling tiles, but what does Chris know? "You're not dead," Adam says, which is, Chris hadn't even realized he'd spoken out loud, but he must have. "I need a drink." Why is Chris thinking of him as Adam anyway? The voice is familiar, only a niggling heard it somewhere once kind of way, and Chris can't remember anyone called Adam. Does he understand what we're saying? Chris doesn't understand anything right at this moment. His mind feels crowded, and he is talking without realizing it. He wonders if he's on drugs, morphine or something similar, for the pain that he can't feel. Chris's dad was on morphine after he got ill, but before he bonded with Chris's mom. It was supposed to be addictive, though of course the bond took care of that too. Yes. His skin itches. That could be a side effect of morphine. "Christopher? Christopher, my name is Dr. Sanders. I represent Holly Fields Hospital, and I need you to understand that this establishment takes no responsibility for what has happened to you, and you have no grounds to pursue legal action against us." The man sounds uncomfortable, as though he's reading from some kind of script. "Due to the unusual circumstances of the procedure, you are allowed to request a removal at any time." "I have no idea what you're talking about," Chris thinks. He doesn't understand, Adam says. I won't disappear or anything. I just really need a drink right now. And no, you're not fucking dead. How many times do I have to say it? Chris blinks, because he is almost positive he didn't say anything that time. He was just quietly wondering if maybe this was hell, and hell was just confusion and awkwardness forever. Adam, Dr. Sanders starts to say, which means Chris's random guess of a name was right, which is kind of unsettling. Maybe he heard it while he was unconscious. If Dr. Sanders is right and Chris is at a hospital, they must be treating him for the accident. He's on some kind of painkiller, one of the painkillers that doesn't actually numb anything, but somehow removes all the pain so you can't even tell that you're injured and makes your skin itch uncomfortably. Sorry, Adam says, but my head hurts and my skin itches and no one told me this was going to be a forever kind of deal. I just want to go back to my boyfriend, go to a bar, and forget all of this ever happened. And fuck, Chris Allen, can you shut up for 5 fucking seconds? Chris opens his mouth, then closes it again, just to make sure that he wasn't saying anything. I'm really not qualified to deal with this. You should be here. You should definitely be here. And if you could maybe take his hand or something? Adam snorts. No fucking way. I did not sign up for this. There's a clatter like something falling over. No one told me this was going to happen. No one explained. I'll call a magician up here. We can break. You'll do no such fucking thing. The bed sags as a large shape enters Chris's peripheral vision. And slowly, something warm brushes against his hand. Warm fingers close around his palm, and the itching fades, starting from his hand and spreading across his body, until he's left in a state of relaxation. He can move his toes and close his fingers around the hand. He opens his mouth again, and is pretty sure that if he tried, he could talk. His mind starts to pull itself back in order, starting with, my name is Chris Allen, and working out through, I was hit by a van, and my girlfriend just left me, until it reaches the very edges, and somehow slightly beyond that, to, his name is Adam Lambert. Chris jumps, and almost tries to look over his shoulder to find where the words are coming from. Then he opens his eyes fully, and looks up at the man sitting on his bed, and yeah, his name is Adam fucking Lambert. Shit. Yeah, says Adam Lambert. American Idol, theatrical. Oh God, oh God, oh God. Shit. Chris jerks backwards, but thankfully Adam doesn't let go of his hand, because apparently one touch is all it takes for the itching to vanish completely and the headache to fade. Adam Lambert, Chris's mind is saying over and over. Adam Lambert, American Idol, rock star. What the hell is going on here? Dr. Sanders doesn't hesitate. The moment they've made eye contact, he ducks away to do whatever it is doctors do when they're not confusing the hell out of their patients. I'll let you explain, Mr. Lambert. Mr. Allen, I repeat, you are allowed to request an annulment at any time, and the hospital is not liable for anything. The door to the room swishes shut behind him, leaving Adam sitting on his bed, and Chris with no idea what's going on, except that Adam Lambert is in his hospital room. Also, you know, still holding Chris's hand. No explanation for that coming out either. Look, this isn't hard, Adam snaps all of a sudden, as though Chris has been doing something terrible this entire time. You just imagine throwing up a wall around your head. It doesn't have to be a good wall. It could be made of fucking sand for all I care, because I have no interest in pushing at it. But right now, there is nothing, and I don't actually want to know what you're thinking, because if I'm honest, I want nothing to do with you at... He stops all of a sudden. Chris keeps visualizing the castle in his head and wonders if Adam is a magician or a psychic or just plain crazy. Thank you, Adam says, and for a moment they sit there in silence. Chris wondering how long he has to visualize this wall and how Adam is in his head, and also why the hell is Adam still holding his hand? You have to speak out loud. I'm not a fucking mind reader. Chris turns red and stares at the blanket because it's the only thing in his line of sight that isn't Adam. I think I'm a little behind here, he says slowly, trying to prompt Adam for an explanation. You're holding my hand. Adam looks down as though this is surprising. His chipped black nail polish and perfectly soft fingers are pressing against Chris's rough palm. Yeah, Adam says, then seems to realize that he still hasn't let go and tugs his hand back quickly. I mean, whatever. Chris's hand starts to itch. He reaches across to scratch it absently, and then his wrists start to itch too, which is just annoying, and Adam is still looking at him. I'm not dead, he says slowly, waiting for Adam to contradict him. No, Adam agrees. You are, however, beginning to sound like a bit of a broken record on that subject. You're not dead. You're still alive. Your heart is beating. How many times do I have to say it? Chris turns redder. I get it, he mutters, stretching out his arm before him, palms out. No broken bones, no scars, not even any grazes. It's just hard to believe. There was a van. Was there a van? Adam closes his eyes, remembering something that makes him wince. Yes, there was a van. There was a van, and I was... But I'm not dead? You can kind of see why I might need reassurance. I remember feeling pretty dead. He moves his legs slowly to check if they work. How long have I been here? He hesitates, because Adam seems to know him, and maybe... How do I know you? How long has it been? Have I forgotten? It's not amnesia, Adam says. You were run over this morning. You died for about a minute early this afternoon. It's now evening. Chris swallows. He starts, even though he's starting to see, because... No, it can't be that. Adam reaches out to grab Chris's hand again, which feels so much better than not touching, that Chris is starting to get worried and turns both their arms over to expose the two forearms side by side. Chris's mouth falls open a little. He reaches forward with his free hand, tracing the Eye of Horus tattoo on Adam's arm, then moving his hand to touch the same tattoo on his own skin. It's not the same style or the same design of tattoo, it's the same actual tattoo, down to the tiniest detail. You have three guesses, Adam says, and only the first one counts. You have to leave, Katie said. Her hair was pulled back from her face as she stood in the kitchen of the tiny apartment. She looked at home there, in designer clothes with the newspaper open to the audition pages. She looked like an LA girl through and through, like she belonged. Chris couldn't remember ever belonging in any building. He didn't belong in the house in Conway. He didn't belong on any of the mission trips. He certainly didn't belong in this one-bedroom den on this shitty side of LA. He didn't get attached to buildings, didn't like being tied down to one place. But he'd always thought of himself as belonging where Katie was. She was his rock, his anchor, the one stationary point in his life. He could go to Morocco or Thailand or Haiti and she would always be on the other end of the phone, waiting up when he got home to greet him with a smile and a kiss. If she belonged in this shitty LA apartment, he belonged there with her. Except apparently, he didn't. Is this about work? I can get work in LA. I don't mind living in LA. She shook her head, and he realized her eyes were red. It's not about LA, Chris. It's about Haiti and Declan and what I need right now. What I've always needed, in fact. And what you need is a waster and a dropout with less career prospects than the average footstool who can't afford gas or food or his own apartment? This is his apartment, Chris. I moved in with him. He asked me to bond with him. She reached back to tug the elastic out of her hair. And you can't exactly talk about dropouts with no career prospects, can you, Mr. Just One More Mission Trip? Are you going to bond with him? The rage drops from her face, and she shakes her head in a way that means, I'm tired, rather than no. I don't know. Maybe. I'm tired of sitting at home worrying that someone will get themselves killed because I couldn't save him. You don't think he's just using you for your body? Maybe he's ill and he just wants the medical benefits without caring that you'll be tied to him forever. Get out. I hope you and Declan are very happy together. Are you okay? Adam is sitting on the bed still, tracing the tattoo on his wrist over and over with one black-nailed finger. Chris stands by the window, looking out over LA, and wondering where Katie is now. Bonded, he says, for what must be the millionth time. Bonded. His body intrinsically linked to another, so if anything hurts one of them, their body just follows the template of the other person's to fix itself instantaneously. A magical procedure that allows couples, established couples, to guarantee neither will die first, both of them aging gracefully together. He can see Adam reflected in the window, his face lowered. Yeah, bonded. Why? Adam's face jerks upwards. They couldn't save you, he says, as though it should be obvious. Adam is a lot of things, but Chris has already established that obvious isn't one of them. Adam drops his head back into his hands. If you want to break it, they promised they'd do it, since you didn't consent. Consent. Never mind that most bonds required at least 6 months of relationship counseling, large numbers of invasive tests, and constant reminders that this is very serious and should not be entered into lightly. In an emergency situation, such as Chris's father's cancer, a long-established relationship could cut the pre-bond procedure to a week. I didn't know you could break a bond. Adam drags a hand through his hair. They can remove it, but it's not. It would be like it had never happened at all. You'd still be... Oh. Chris swallows a little as he follows the lights of cars around the city. So if they broke the bond, he would go back to just having been hit by a van. You'd be in hospital from the beginning, Adam continues. They might be able to do something they couldn't do last time. But they couldn't put the bond back if anything went wrong. That would be the end of it. Meaning Chris would be dead. Permanently. Adam seems to be waiting for him to say something, but all he can manage is, oh. Adam drags a hand through his hair and stands up. I need a drink, he starts, but is interrupted by the door sliding open so Dr. Sanders can re-enter, followed by a middle-aged woman in a peasant skirt and a white blouse. Mr. Lambert? Mr. Allen? This is Ruby Evans, the hospital's resident magician. She's here to answer any questions you may have, or, if you'd like, to break the bond between you. He hesitates, looking over at Chris's back. Do you want to break the bond? Chris's church always stressed the importance of no bonding before marriage, and the reverend at his home church disapproved of it afterwards as well. Bonding should happen in a committed relationship. Anything else was just selling your body out, and over again, people used to say that they'd rather die than bond for anything less than true love. Anyway, Adam can't want this. He certainly doesn't look like he wants this, and there can't be space in the world for a rock star whose skin itches every time he isn't around a random stranger's hand. This was a bad idea from all around, and if it breaks, it'll be like Chris never woke up. Like this interlude was just some crazy dream, and everyone can go back to their lives, because most people don't survive being hit by vans, so this clearly isn't part of any higher plan. All three of them are watching him, probably analyzing his every facial twitch reflected in the dark window. Chris opens his mouth to say, "Break it," and what comes out is, "I don't want to die." Adam looks away. Ruby Evans nods, understandingly, because apparently she's seen hundreds of people who aren't strong enough. "Adam?" she asks, and her voice is surprisingly soft. "Well, I'm not going to fucking kill him now, am I?" Chris bites his lip. Dr. Sanders takes a half step back, and Ruby finds a sudden overwhelming interest in her shoes. Adam is tense for a long moment. Then he drops on the bed and lets his head fall into his hands. I don't want anyone to get hurt. Ruby shoos the doctor away with one hand and crosses to sit next to Adam on the bed, beckoning Chris over. "Okay," she says softly, taking both their hands in her own and pressing them together. "This is what I need you to do." "Where do you live?" Adam asks, stiff and awkward. He releases Chris's hand the moment Ruby left the room, but was still sitting uncomfortably on the end of the hospital bed where Chris was lying, waiting for a doctor to check him over a final time and let him go. "I'll need your address and your phone number, obviously." I don't think the rest of what she said. She clearly doesn't understand our circumstances. He had repeated this theory many times while Ruby was in the room, and she had disagreed with it on every occasion. "If we just don't see each other, that's best." Chris bites his lip, because on the one hand, Ruby is supposed to be the one who knows what she's talking about. But on the other hand, she seemed to be suggesting he sleep with Adam. "So, you think if we ignore our sacred magical bond, it'll go away?" Adam looks sideways at him. "Well, anything's going to sound ridiculous if you say it in that tone of voice. Cold turkey works for alcoholics, and it works for drug addicts. It can fucking work for a vague itchiness when you're not touching my hand." He looks down at the bed and realizes his fingers are inching closer to Chris's, apparently of their own accord. He jerks them back fiercely. "She said regular sexual intimacy, which, as far as I can tell, means go have sex. I have a boyfriend. You probably have a cute blonde wannabe actress secreted away in some quaint southern town where I would get shot for daring to enter. You're alive, I'm alive, just tell me where you're living and we can go our separate..." "I don't know," Chris interrupts. "Where I'm living, I don't..." He hesitates, unwilling to admit to Adam being right about anything. "My girlfriend just left me. I can't go back to where she's..." He swallows, trying not to remember Katie shouting at him about Declan's apartment, about moving in with him, about bonding. "My parents are in Arkansas, but I can't go home with..." He turns his wrist over to show Adam's tattoo again, eerily perfect in the fluorescent lights. I have friends back home, but I can't afford a plane or gas, so I guess... He trails off, realizing for the first time just how serious his situation is. If you can recommend any cheap hotels... Adam stares at him for a long moment, possibly in awe as to just how someone can have quite such a shitty turn of bad luck. How much money do you have? Chris looks down at the hospital gown he's wearing. That depends on whether anyone sees fit to return my wallet, but I should be able to get a hotel. He looks up into Adam's face. Adam's makeup is smudged, his hair is starting to fall down, and his studded jacket looks completely out of place in the brightly lit hospital room, but he is still very clearly a rock star. A very rich rock star. For a few nights, Chris presses on, and then I can probably find a cardboard box somewhere. You know, I'm resourceful that way. Adam's face sours, as though he knows he's being played, but there really isn't anything he can do about it. Come back to mine tonight, then. We can figure out what to do about all this in the morning. He jerks his hand away from Chris's again, under the pretense of reaching up to check his hair. I've always said I'd do anything for a fan. I didn't expect... I'm not a fan, Chris throws out, mostly just because he's tired of being accommodating and wants to see the look on Adam's face. Your music just isn't my kind of thing. Sorry. Adam looks as though he just swallowed a lime. I suppose you voted for Danny. Yeah, Chris says, entirely to piss Adam off. In reality, he'd voted for Allison right up into the finale when, yeah, he'd voted for Adam because Allison liked him and Danny seemed like an asshole. He just seems so genuine, you know? Adam stares at him for a long, disbelieving moment, then turns away. Maybe I'll just pay for you to go into a hotel. Chris opens his mouth to offer up some witty retort that he hasn't come up with yet, but is interrupted by the door sliding open and Dr. Sanders re-entering with his clothes in a clear plastic bag. You're being discharged, she says kindly. Clearly there's nothing wrong with you, and as long as Adam's here, that will remain the case. Ruby asked me to give you her number in case of emergencies, and told me to remind you that the further apart you are, the worse it gets. She reaches into her pocket and pulls out a business card, looking between the two of them for a moment before handing it to Adam, who looks at it for a moment, then passes it on to Chris. Apparently, whoever designs his ridiculous jacket doesn't cater for needs such as pockets. Chris programs the number into his phone and slides the card into his jeans. A car has been sent for you. It's around the back, and I had a word with the driver to make it clear that you needed a rest and were to be taken straight home. Chris opens his mouth to say he's fine, but Adam slams a gloved hand over it. That's great. Thank you. Dr. Sanders looks briefly between the two of them. Stay to the back staircase so the paparazzi don't catch a glimpse of you through the front windows. And you can rest assured no one in this hospital will breathe a word about the unusual nature of your situation. Adam keeps his hand over Chris's mouth until Dr. Sanders lets the door close behind her, and then takes it back so he can drop his head into his hands. Fuck, I didn't even think. Fuck. How the fuck is this going to look? There are photos of me and Drake from yesterday. I'm supposed to be the good guy. I won American Idol. I played at fucking Disneyland. Chris has no idea what to say, but he feels a slight tinge of guilt for winding Adam up earlier, so reaches out to tap Adam lightly on the shoulder. Sorry. Adam just lets out a low moan of despair. Lane is going to kill me.